Welcome to the On Purpose Show with Susan Reeve and Rick Hansen. For compelling conversations, opening doors to discover and live a life work that's alive with passion and purpose. And now, here are Susan and Rick.
Hi, this is Rick, and we are so glad you've joined us here today on the On Purpose Show here on the Link Local Network. And today, our episode is titled Reduced to Joy. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Rick. I'm so excited to be here with you today and really excited about our conversation with our guest, Mark Nepo. And, you know, I know that time between dreams where there's a lot of uncertainty about what's next, what's our purpose, that joy sometimes seems so far from what's possible for us at the moment. And yet it seems as if we can't access that joy, it's really a challenge to get clear about what makes our heart sing.
Yes, and Mark's work, his poetry and his writing, I think speaks so directly to this process of transformation as we're growing into who we are at a whole new level. So I'm excited for our conversation and grateful that he's joining us today. You want to tell us more about Mark?
Yeah. Mark is a poet and philosopher. He's taught poetry and spirituality for 40 years. And it's so fascinating. He's been called one of the finest spiritual teachers of our time. He's published 14 books, has a new one on the way in August, and 8 audio programs, including a beautiful, beautiful book of poetry called Reduced to Joy, which was voted the best spiritual book of 2013 by Spirituality and Practice. And he has appeared twice on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday last November. And I feel really blessed and grateful that I had the opportunity to meet him at a book signing when he read many of his poems in Reduced to Joy. And I was so inspired that opening the book randomly each day since November has become part of my daily spiritual practice. So I am thrilled that you're here with us today. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you so much. You're both very kind. It's wonderful to be with you.
It's great to be with you. And a place that we love to start is to hear what have been some of the turning points in your life that have led you to this work that's filled with passion and purpose?
Well, I think that, you know, and let me frame that by saying a word or two so you can hear my turning points in the context of what you were talking about. So let me say a word about joy and about purpose as I keep learning and understanding about it. You know, I think that one of the deepest blocks to joy is the assumption that plagues us, often unspoken, that life is other than where we are. There's no there, there's only here. And so much of our struggle, especially understandably as young people, when we're young, you know, we're always reaching over there, only to be poked and bumped around by life that keeps saying, yeah, but be where you are. And so this leads to something about the notion of purpose and dreaming. You know, I think it's so important to dream and to have goals and to reach, but I think that we make too much of them. I've come to learn that the dreaming and the dreams, they're not the end point. If I get what I dream or not, it doesn't determine whether I'm a success or failure. The dreams are all designed to help us stay close to aliveness. And so they're kindling. And so when one dream gets used up, we have to reach for another. So in that context, let me share some of the turning points in my life. And clearly, you know, one of the first ones was as a young person, everybody goes through this, you know, falling in love and then being brokenhearted for the first time. And that was a turning point because I wasn't isolated, but I didn't develop like true deep friends until I went to college. And so in high school, I had a lot of acquaintances. I had no one to talk to, so I began writing out of a broken heart and to heal. And, of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I wasn't just talking to myself. I had started a conversation with the universe, and that was incredibly healing. And, you know, later on, in about, you know, we move ahead about, 15 years or so, and I'm in my mid-30s, and, of course, from my writing, and, you know, many folks know about my cancer journey. And that was a huge turning point. And I want to say that, you know, to be clear, that for me it was cancer, but it's not to deify the obstacle or the suffering. What opens us is never as important as what is open. It could have been something much less dramatic. For all we know, the great poet Rilke had a great transformation of wakefulness in his life, and nothing outwardly appeared to happen. He was apparently writing and pondering and just being in a garret in Paris, and the world, if he understood it, fell out from under him. He had to begin again. So, but for me, my cancer journey, you know, really, really forced me to live out of my heart. And from that point forward, my mind served my heart and not the other way around. And the second great, great learning out of that journey, which was 26 years ago now, which is hard to believe, the heat of that journey, is that, you know, I was raised Jewish, and I am Jewish by heritage, but from my cancer journey, I am a student of all paths, because during that time, I welcomed everything. I had people from all faiths and traditions offer me kindly help and blessings and prayers and all kinds of things. So being blessed to still be here, I wasn't and am still not wise enough to know what worked and what didn't. And so I landed kind of like Jonah, spit out of the mouth of a whale. I landed back in life challenged to believe in everything. And all my work, all my books, all my teaching, all, and I believe each book is an inquiry, all my inquiries have been to discover the common center of all paths and their unique gifts that help us live.
And so what that raises for me is, in that journey of discovery, what have been the common threads?
Oh, well, my goodness. You know, I think at the heart of all traditions is the unspoken truth that we are all connected at heart. We are all the same at heart. And that life, by whatever you name what is greater than us, life by design is just hard enough that we need each other. Mm-hmm. And no one can do it alone. And so the purpose of love. The purpose of love is to keep everything and everyone connected. And so this leads us to the light of obstacles, because every tradition tells us that obstacles are teachers. You know, I have a chapter in the new book that's coming out in this fall that is called "What's in the Way is the Way," and it's so obvious, and yet we all resist it. You know, I'm always stopped and struck. And, you know, and this goes back thousands of years. Our oldest known narrative is the story of Gilgamesh, an Assyrian tale. And why I raise that here is because this was 7,000 years ago, is the earliest we know of this story. It's of an empty king who's lost between dreams who has no sense of purpose, and he has one friend in the world. And in his emptiness, he decides to wage war on nature. And in so doing, his friend died. And so now, 7,000 years ago, in his grief, he wants to demand of the Assyrian god, who is Utnapishtim, great name, Utnapishtim, to bring him back to life, to bring him, and of course, like everyone has ever grieved ever since. But this is the point about how our stubbornness and our not seeing that what's in the way is the way. He's told, okay, you can go see, you can see God. But along the way, in order to get there, you're going to come across some stones which you must give to the ferryman so he knows how to cross you over to the land of immortality. And, of course, Gilgamesh comes across the stones three different times, and each time in his grief, in his stubbornness, in his hurriedness, he gets annoyed and angry and he smashes them. And now he gets to the ferryman, and the ferryman says, oh, I've been expecting you, Gilgamesh, where are the stones? So we've been doing this a long time, a long time. And no one is exempt from the humility of being opening our heart after we've been hurt to restore our trust in life and to find our aliveness, because our purpose, you know, there's a deep correlation I've come to understand between the soul's calling and the call of the soul. The soul's calling, which we hear a lot about, is our work in the world. What are we called to do? How do we contribute? And the call of the soul is that depth part of being that our soul doesn't care what we do, where we live, what we are called. It just wants us to be as alive as possible. And, of course, the two inform each other. When we can stay close to our aliveness, we discover what our work is.
I love that. Mark, as you talk today, one thing I hear is that a teacher of mine talked about being life's greatest student. And that's something I hear from you, that you really approach life with the eyes of a student, this kind of continued inquiry. And I know that,
yeah.
I mean, you have a whole book about listening.
Yes.
So if someone's in listening mode, if they, you know, have come to the point where, you know, they don't know the way, and they are even allowing themselves to be in listening mode, what would you say to them that might be helpful?
Well, I and again, no one knows anything here. We're just comparing notes. And I would just speak from my own experience that, you know, one of the greatest allies and resources in my life, and the most difficult, is to wait. If I didn't wait, I needed in my cancer journey to make very, what appeared as illogical decisions, each one a stepping stone to my being here to talk to you today. And only waiting revealed what was the right next step. And so often in a world, and there's nothing wrong with technology, it's just a tool. It's not good or bad. But it takes on values when we don't have inner values to determine how to use those tools. So the speed with which we live, the urgency, you know, all kind of conditions us that we're going to get, quote, answers. We're going to get direction immediately, and if we don't, we're off to look somewhere else. And I think time and again, I've been humbled to discover that the things that matter most take time to reveal a path, a way, a light, even for me to understand the language of the next step. So the most difficult thing, and the thing I would offer anyone that has any kind of question about where they are or where they're going or who they are and what they're called to do, is to open our heart and lean in and wait so that a conversation can begin. You know, one of the things that's very interesting, and teachers are everywhere, if we watch, we're all fascinated by birds, especially birds in flight. If we watch a bird flying with its wings fully spread, what I've come to notice is that what leads is their chest, their heart. They cannot open their wings completely unless they lead with their heart. And so to us. So to us. So maybe this would be a good time to read a poem from the book.
I think it would be a perfect time.
Well, Susan, let me read the poem that you were drawn to today. It's Made from Bone. When I can be the truth, it grows more and more clear when it is necessary to tell the truth. That is, when I have access to the place within me that is lighted, I don't have to speak heatedly. I can just give away warmth. When I am still enough to brush quietly with eternity, I don't have to speak of God. I can just offer peace to those around me. A tree grows so it can convey wind. It is not the wind. And a person grows in order to convey spirit. They say that animals recharge their innocence each time they hoof the earth. And we are reborn each time we touch what matters.
It's such a treat to hear you read it. And I wanted to speak a bit about the waiting, because I was so excited when I got your book and I made this decision, I'm going to read a poem every day. And I noticed that those first few days, I was hurriedly reading it. You know, the goal was I'm reading a poem. And then I started to read them aloud, slowly, word by word. And the experience was totally different. The first time, those first few days, I was into the doing of the reading of the poetry. After that, I was really into allowing the words, the message, feeling, to land wherever it was landing for me on that particular day. So it seems to me that the gift of poetry, and a gift that you have so beautifully, is to, in a few words, take us to such a deep place.
I'm curious
about that process for you.
Well, you know, let me say that, you know, I believe that poetry, more than words on the page, poetry is the unexpected utterance of the soul. And it doesn't, we're all poets. We're all poets when we can open our hearts and be honest with each other. And so, you know, the reason not that these poems, but any poems, and really the poetry of life speaks, is because, like sheet music, you know, if you're a gifted musician, you can read sheet music and hear it in your head. You can just look at this page and read it. But that's still not the same as playing it. And so, you know, we're blessed that we can read silently to ourselves. But that's not the same as playing it, as being tough, because what happens when we give voice to anything is that then we feel it inside ourselves. We feel it between us. And that, you know, I think the challenge of our age, and this has much to do with the writing process for me, which is a process of inquiry and discovery, The challenge of our age is to stay in relationships. Now, I don't mean if we're in abusive relationships or in relationships that don't work. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about staying in relationship to who we are, to our aliveness, to everything larger than us, to the mystery that we wake in, to our obstacle, to our experience. And this opens up this conversation with life. And this, you know, being human, we can't, even as I say that, we can't do it all the time. So this now says what? That we each have to develop a personal practice of return. Because while I might be clear with you now, I will be confused later today. While I might be sensitive, I will be insensitive tomorrow. I will fall down. I love medieval monks when asked how they practice their penance, which is by falling down and getting up. So I believe the spiritual journey of being a spirit in a body in time on earth involves developing a practice of return so I can restore my trust in life when I lose it.
Thank you for that reminder. I needed multiple times in the course of a day, and I think it's so important for our listeners, some of whom may think, you know, I'll be happy. Life will be good once I'm in this new career, I'm in this new job, I have clarity about where I'm going. And yet, to bring aliveness to every moment of our life is what I'm hearing, is what I'm hearing from you. And the value of it is, you know, is priceless.
Well, this leads me, let me read one other short poem, conversations leading up to it. It's called One String.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one. One String. I am so busy at times trying to make it all worthwhile that I am stunned at how easily the whole of life speaks to me. When music I've never heard or a truth I never understood plucks the one string I carry deep within. I only want that string plucked, and yet it stays in the place only suffering or surrender can open. Still, violins in minor keys make me swallow my fear, and herons flying into the end of a long day make me wish I'd led a more peaceful life.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Mark, something when I read your words, that touches something close to my own heart is often nature. Nature is a teacher. Nature is a model. There's just a richness in that. Can you say a little just about, for you, in whatever way nature is a part of?
I feel like, you know, from an early age, it's so interesting because I feel like nature, the small teachers are everywhere, hiding in the open. And from an early age, God, nature, the universe, whatever name you have, and I, by the way, I believe that if you believe there's anything larger than you, then you're a mystic. It's as simple as that. And so from an early age, the universe and God spoke to me in metaphor. I would hear this everywhere. And still, so I, you know, when, and this, again, it takes patience and waiting and opening our heart. I can look at you know, a tree, the same tree for years, but until I'm very present and open, I don't start to hear what it has to say. You know, there's a great little story about and this has to do with listening and to teachers, to small teachers, about a, I read about this in the Book of Awakening, but about a master who sends his apprentice to sit by the river until he has learned all the river has to teach. And so he's a very serious student. He goes by the river and he spends the first day trying to find the right place to sit. And he's too close, he's too far. Finally, he settles in the middle and goes into earnest meditation for 3 days, after which he has a terrific headache. And just then, a monkey comes along and jumps into the middle of the river, splashing and yapping and jumping up and down. And the apprentice cracks and begins to weep. And he takes all his things and he returns and tells his master the story. And his master says, the monkey heard, you just listened.
Mm.
The monkey heard, you just listened. And so, you know, the purpose of all practice is not to keep practicing. The purpose of all practice is to get wet. Not that we can't learn by listening and watching and observing and studying. These are great tools. But when they serve the heart, the purpose is to enter life, not to watch it.
Oh, it is such a treat to listen to you. Thank you so much. And I want our listeners to know how to learn more about you and your work and your books. And Mark's website is www.marknepo.com. That's MarkNep as in Peter O. Mark has a new book coming out in August, The Endless Practice, Becoming Who You Were Born to Be. And we end each call with one question to our guests, and that is, words of wisdom, a gem of wisdom. And I'm wondering if your gem of wisdom would be the title poem in Reduced to Joy. Reduced to Joy.
I would be sure. That's wonderful. Thank you. So Reduced to Joy. I was sipping coffee on the way to work, the back road under a canopy of maples turning orange. In the dip of wood, a small doe gently leaping. I pulled over, for there was nowhere to go. She paused as if she knew I was watching. A few orange leaves fell around her like blessings no one can seem to find. I sipped some coffee completely at peace, knowing it wouldn't last, but that's all right. We never know when we will blossom into what we're supposed to be. It might be early. It might be late. It might be after 30 years of failing at a misguided way, or the very first time we dare to shed our mental skin and touch the world. They say, if real enough, some see God at the moment of their death. But isn't every fall and letting go a death? Isn't God waiting right now in the chill between the small doe's hoof and those fallen leaves?
Thank you, Mark, for being with us today. I'm beaming. I feel reduced to joy in this moment.
Well, thank you both. It's a joy to be with you and to be in this conversation. Thanks for all your good work.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you,
okay,
Mark.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Susan, what do you say after that? That's just... I feel alive.
I think we let our listeners know that there's going to be this week's winner in our Insider Circle drawing is going to receive a copy of Mark's beautiful, beautiful book of poetry, Reduced to Joy.
Yes, and next week we have a show along the same lines of this idea of practice. It's called Inner Guidance, Your Divine Birthright. And Ann Archer-Butcher is going to be joining us to talk about inner guidance in every moment. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye, Rick.
Bye, Susan.
Join Susan and Rick next week right here on the On Purpose Show and join the conversation at facebook.com/onpurposeshow.